Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 16th, the Norris Group proudly presented its 8th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds from the event benefited Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners. First Lending Solutions, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, Property Radar, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, and White House Catering.
We're seeing that in the office market with these companies where everybody's got a stand-up desk in the middle and conference rooms around. So I think this whole idea of how much space you need and how much time you're actually spending out of your home, I mean, it's just a very different aesthetic. So I think the wonderful thing about living where we live is you can do it all. But it's happening, right? Because they're valuing their time above that kind of a lifestyle, and they kind of like the energy of being in a higher density environment. And for anyone that hasn't like trekked to downtown LA lately, I mean, it's amazing what's going on there. Finally, you know, it's very exciting and vibrant. So
and is that a free market dictating how
I don't
that
think there are
built?
Any free markets anywhere.
I
just
agree
my personal that. Thing. So I don't mean to disagree with you. You know, if the benefits go, what you know, I
that's
don't think
my
we
point,
have,
Leslie.
No, but I don't think there ever are. But
isn't it the market?
I if think that's there's what been the, a lot of subsidies.
If millennials are looking for that, then the market's going to dictate that that's what the builders are going to build.
Well, you know, downtown LA is essentially what you're seeing is urban reuse, you know, where they're taking these old bank buildings and old office buildings and making them into condominiums. I mean, there's just a lot of really creative, wonderful things going on that don't really have anything to do with government or whatever. It just made sense for the developer to do that because the demand was there and you had these urban pioneers. And I think it's right. It's very exciting.
I think there is one development that gives more credibility to that than one might have looking sort of over history, and that's the development of charter schools. The fact that now part of the flight to the suburbs was to get access to good quality schools, because a lot of the urban schools in many urban districts, not all, but in many, are not very healthy schools. So to the extent that the millennials would like a closer urban setting and they have access to charter schools, that I think has been some development. But if you match what they say is an aspiration to their actions, of those who have formed renting households, the majority are renting single family homes. And that's what they're actually doing if you look at the American Community Survey. And so there's a statistical thing that you have to be careful of when you're looking at any group. If you go back 10 years, there were lots of predictions that the boomers liked the party. So when the kids moved out, they were going to sell their suburban homes and get a condo downtown and party the night away. Now, my wife and I live in Cape Coral, Florida, which our kids call God's waiting room. And I have to tell you, if you're going to get a reservation at a good restaurant in Cape Coral, wait till about 7:30. So what people saw was there were some boomers that were selling their suburban home and moving to the city, but there are so many of them that the number that were out in that behavioral tail was larger than their parents' population group. And so numerically you saw it happening, but proportionally there was not a behavioral change. So I think the same thing's going to apply to some degree with the millennials, because they are a larger population group than the boomers. So yes, some of them will do that. We don't know for sure whether it's going to be a behavioral change, but I think you kind of need to watch that characteristic. The fact that a number of them do it, that's important, but it may not reflect a behavioral change.
I just want to add one other thing with respect to affordability and baby boomers, and that is, I think one of the key distinguishing characteristics of this cycle, at least from the perspective of my group, is lack of inventory. And I think that has to do with baby boomers who might want to sell and party downtown, but they're stuck. They can't afford to do it, right? Because even though their home has increased in value a lot, what they want to do is even more expensive. Plus, they might be giving up a great low-rate mortgage because, you know, they might be giving up a great tax base, particularly with Prop 13 in California. They have capital gains to worry about. They may not be able to qualify for a mortgage, the one they got 10 years ago. They're not going to be. So there's all kinds of reasons that have made listing inventory so sticky, you know, and I think people are stuck. And one of the portals did a survey of people asking, you know, how satisfied are you with your home? And you know what? Everybody loves being a homeowner, but, you know, they want to tweak it. You know, they'd like to move, but they simply can't afford to do it. And I think that might be a structural impediment that's going to be with us for quite a while.
A futuristic question. I like going in limos with the group because I usually hear something. And 1 year, Sean was in there talking about 3D printers, and I honestly had never even heard of one. And he said he was buying his 10-year-old son one. I was like, okay. So I go home.
You printed the limo you were driving in, actually.
I go home and I pull it up, and then I sort of pay attention to it, and all of a sudden they're building a house with a 3D printer somewhere. So, you know, when I see that, is there any future in that becoming a competitor? You know, we get these little house shows where they've got this 80 square foot house. I mean, how long would it take a 3D printer to whoop one of those up?
We are so overdue for technical innovation in the building industry that, you know, so if you look back at that, you know, Robert Shiller's chart that everybody was looking at kind of before the thing burst, there was a period back in the 20s where prices dropped quite a bit, and it wasn't due to economic, to loans or those types of things. It was due to the fact that gypsum board and stick frame construction became popular, and the cost of building a house went down dramatically. And I actually think that's one of the more interesting things. I don't think it's next year. I don't think it's within the next 5 years. But I could foresee a time when it costs half of what it builds, costs today to build a house, maybe less. If you look at the stuff they're doing in China and other places where they're literally, they've got robots welding bridges, right? And the robots are riding on rails that the robots themselves printed to print a bridge. Right? And so they literally follow themselves out over this thing and connect it on the other side.
No one's ever gone on it after that. I'm only kidding.
But, the ability to do a lot of that stuff's, a lot closer, than we think. And again, this particular building standards, the building code today doesn't envision all of those, any of those things. And it talks about, certain clips that have to be used and other things that are totally, the opposite of that, progress. So how those two things collide and what jurisdictions that care about affordability will allow some of these experiments to happen that are well-engineered, structural, no issues, probably have better structural
energy
characteristics than current house building techniques, but it's not going to follow the current code. So you're going to have somebody willing to break those molds.
The first time I looked up a 3D printer, I happened on an article where there was a baby born with a heart defect, and they took a 3D scan, made a copy of the kid's heart from a 3D printer. The doctor got to hold the kid's heart outside of his body, but it was just a replica. They saw where the defect was, and then they did the surgery right where it needed to be. I mean, holy mackerel.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's what a 3D printer can do. So, and then, you know, and then they're building houses. So anyway, I just thought, wow, that's pretty amazing.
My son's been working on a project. There's a company, and I'm going to forget the name of it, but you can look it up, where you can contribute. It's an open source for building prosthetics. And you can contribute either by helping out with designing new prosthetics, or if you have a printer at home, you can print a whole prosthetic arm, hand, whatever, for somebody, and you know, as a donation. Wow. You know, so it's really interesting.
That is.
Oddly, I think that the building industry is kind of screaming for something, because we are having a heck of a time finding workers who will build what we need to do to keep up with what little, you know, demand we're able to fill just because of all the regulation. Our workers left during their session and they haven't come back. They went and found other things to do. So we're kind of screaming for the need for, you know, a way to do development with fewer people, but I think that whole regulatory overlay, not only at, I mean, the state level, but also the local level, I mean, this is one of the most overregulated industries we have, and this is the only hook they've got is when you're building a new home. So they are going to do everything they can to make it as you know, traditional as they see fit at the regulatory level. And I don't think anybody at the regulatory level is thinking outside the box that we want to go to 3D printers and make a house less affordable. I mean, more affordable, I'm sorry. Less, you know what I mean. I don't think anybody's saying, well, let's find a way to make housing cheaper, so we'll go this route instead of, you know, requiring this joist and that bolt instead of the ones we're doing today. We're draconian in our regulation, and we keep ratcheting down on what we got without thinking outside the box.
It's not all on the regulators, too, though. I mean, if you walked into an architect and said, you know, look, this is what I want to do, they wouldn't have the capability. Structural engineers don't have the capability.
Right.
They just don't have that training and background.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a education, you know, all of that's got to change, but I think it will.
How much of the increase in cost of housing has come from the building itself versus the land and the development costs and the availability of land, I think, is kind of a question.
It is definitely the cost of land in California.
Yeah.
It's huge.
But, you know, what's nuts, really, bigger than anything else, is the fact that we don't know that answer, right? Mm-hmm. So you look at the major markets, stocks, bonds, commodities, real estate, money markets, right? And it's only real estate, no offense, Leslie, where we self-report 30 days after the fact on what the heck happened, right? Everything else we know down to the second how many trades happened and what they were for and all the rest.
Right.
I mean, this industry is a joke when it comes to instrumenting what's happening on a day-to-day basis.
Well, it's undocumented, you know? I mean, people call me all the time and ask me very reasonable questions like, what is the share of Chinese buyers in the California housing market in 2014, and I'm like, well, I don't know, but we did a survey, and this is what our survey of our members said. But on the other hand, there's privacy issues. I mean, nobody kind of fills out a form and sends it to Sacramento or sends it to the California Association of Realtors when they buy a piece of property and tells us all this great information that ought to be available. I mean, it's really a problem. I could not agree with you more.
I thought one thing that for sure would come out of the downturn would be, you know, that somebody would say, geez, we got to fix this recording system so that we can see this coming next time, right? And, you know, it'd be a very cheap solution to go fix the 3,150 county recorders, have all documents filed electronically, have all of that data available the minute that it was filed, add some additional questions if there's some additional important questions, like, are you a citizen? Are you, you know, whatever? Are you a foreign national buying? You know, things that we might want to have some understanding of what's impacting prices in Silicon Valley. Is it just tech workers coming in, or is it folks from, you know, somebody's talking about the Chinese coming in and leaving homes, buying $1.5 million homes and leaving them vacant because they just want the appreciation and it's too much work to deal with a renter?
Right.
We don't know. We have no idea.
So those HMDA questions are now going to be forced on lenders, to your point. Lenders are worried what happens after October 3rd. TRID happened, right? Just happened, which is supposed to.
Is that a four-letter word?
It is a four-letter word. And the CFPB really hates it. I don't think you'll find it on their website, right? What is that? TILA, RESPA, Integrate, TILA? TILA,
TILA? Truth and Lending.
Right, TILA, TILA.
Are you opposed to that, Truth and Lending?
Am I opposed to truth? Oh, come on. I'll meet you in the bar with pistols at 50 paces.
Free markets.
Free market. It's TILA, RESPA, Integrated Disclosures. Thank you. But what's coming in the next 2 years, they've given everybody 2 years, they have to start collecting all this additional HMDA data, right? They don't know exactly what it is, and they have privacy issues, to your point. Now, I'm not really here tonight. I'm not sitting up here, but I will tell you, all that data is being collected, and something that we have, as far as recording goes, at First American, something, a new product we just came out with called DataTree, or DataTree, depending on how you pronounce it, and we've got about 89%, we've got about 89% of the counties covered right now, right? And so that information is close, and you'll have that at your fingertips pretty soon. So it's coming.
Okay.
But HMDA data is the fear of lenders after TRID. And nobody knows, and I mean, we haven't really touched on TRID tonight, but that's really what's affecting my end of it from an origination standpoint right now, is we have no idea how it's affecting. It's only been in, what, force for 10 days? We have to disclose now to the borrower not only their good faith estimate, but we have to give them their total cost before they go to closing, 3 days before they go to closing. When has that ever happened?
Well, I think that was the point.
You know, for the cost of... So,
but here's the whole thing. We survived for years doing it just great. We had this one little three-year window where it wasn't so good. Right? We're making better loans today than we've made in 20 years, and they keep adding on onerous regulations and driving up the cost. And if you think the consumer's not paying for it, then you're not awake.
You know,
the consumer's paying for it.
For the cost of implementing HMDA, you know, for HMDA through all the lenders, we could have fixed the recording, you know, system. Seriously, and that would have been way better for everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We're really out of time. I want to just go, we'll go from Doug first. Answer one of these two questions, okay?
Ooh. I'm from Washington. If somebody asks you a question you don't like, you answer a different one.
I'm going to. Well, now you have a choice up front. Isn't that good? Okay. What one positive change would you like to see in 2016, or what outside of real estate causes you concern that could impact housing in an indirect way?
Well, the Fed will. Have both direct and indirect impact. So I am concerned about the Fed's posture in the market. I think they're way late in the game, and they're distorting asset prices. So I think that's a big issue.
Okay. Eileen?
At CBIA, we are going to change something in 2016, and that is the way schools, well, we aren't going to change the way school facilities are financed. We're going to continue the existing process as a, you know, self-aggrandizing commercial right now. If we run out of money at the state level for new school facilities to be built, then all bets are off under existing law, and builders and developers must pay 100% of the cost of new school construction. So no more state money, no more school district match, only on the builder-developer. So we have we've circulated petitions to qualify a school bond for the November 2016 ballot. And that will maintain the three-way sharing of state, local, builder match for funding new school facilities out well into the future. And so that's the way, that is the positive change we are going to affect for our industry, so that fees for schools alone don't go up $20,000, $30,000 per home.
Okay.
Les? You know, what keeps me up at night is really related to schools, and that is just the educational attainment, quality, skill level of our kids and our future and our inability to, you know, compete globally. I think a lot of the things we've talked about in terms of housing affordability and all that kind of comes down to
income growth, right, and jobs and skills and being able to, you know, get on a career path that's very positive. And I think for a whole series of reasons, that's been kind of compromised, and we really are lagging behind, particularly in engineering, science, and math, which are the cornerstone of this new economy, you know, with design and so on and so forth. So I think that's something that we really have to get back to. And it's probably on a household-by-household basis, but that does concern me a lot.
David? I don't even remember what the questions were. But
here's well, because you're not here. That's what happened.
Why start now? Here's what I really would like to see. Okay. The people that make the rules for all of us understand what the hell they're making, all right? And that they have to realize how it affects it, because they never have to live by them. There's no accountability right now, truthfully. It's the way it's set up by Dodd-Frank. CFPB has no accountability. It reports to the Department of the Treasury, which reports to the president. They're unchecked. And they've done a pretty good job in some areas. In some areas, it's been really, really difficult. MBA, NAR, the home builders have done an amazing job as an advocacy group working with the CFPB and reining in some of these onerous regulations. But I just would love to see the people in Washington, D.C., big wish, all right, understand and listen to the people that they're making the rules on top of. They don't do that, and okay, they never have to live by them. That would be my wish.
Thank you.
Sean?
Top that.
Do you need a...
I have no idea what the questions were at this point. I was paying attention to everybody. You know, I think my biggest hope for next year is that, you know, we can start to have a serious debate among presidential candidates around, you know, some of these important issues. You know, I think the hitting the zero bound on interest rates and not being able to grow our economy through debt, I think the fact is technology makes us need fewer people working, that labor participation rate. And we are, in my humble opinion, 40 years into technology, but we are about here on a curve that's about to do this. And, you know, you've got McDonald's now that are fully automated and don't need a single worker. You know, so I think there's a lot more of that coming. And to not have a single conversation about anything that matters in these debates kills me.
Yeah.
And that's would be my wish for 2016, that somewhere along there we start talking about things that actually really matter.
And to wrap up, and it's sort of the same line, I wish that every elected official wouldn't be a Republican next year, wouldn't be a Democrat, they'd be an American and do what's best for the people of the country. With that, we have nailed it almost exactly at 10 o'clock. We want to thank you all for being here tonight and participating, and we hope you found it a very enjoyable evening. Thanks so much for coming.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Elite Auctions, iMortgage, In A Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Kukan & Clark, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South RIA, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, National RIA, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Orange County Phoebe, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Resonant Lens Photography, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sacramento Real Estate Club, Capital City Wealth Builders, Southern California Chapter of the Appraisal Institute, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, Tri-Counties Association of Realtors,
You direct. IRA Services. Weston, South Coast Plaza. Wilson Investment Properties, Inc. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event video and sponsor information.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.